This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Dr. Steve Perry's website calls him America's most trusted educator, and he's made a name for himself on television and speaking tours as an advocate for school reform. He is also principal of Hartford's Capital Prep Magnet School. Today, Where We Live, we'll speak with Dr. Perry about his record at Capital Prep, where he says 100% of his graduates are accepted into a four-year university. He's received some criticism for his outspoken views on teacher quality. We want you to join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. You can tweet us at Where We Live, and you can find out more about today's show at WNPR.org. We'd hope to have Dr. Perry in studio, but his schedule's changed. That means later on we will be joined by some other educational thinkers and with your phone calls as well. But we welcome back Dr. Steve Perry to our show. Dr. Perry, welcome back to Where We Live.
Thanks so much, John. Glad to be here.
So, actually, the reason you're here today is we started talking on Twitter. You're on Twitter a lot. I'm on Twitter a lot. And on Sunday mornings, I will often read the news and take a look at just what's happening in the world. And I you're always on Twitter on Sunday mornings, and I follow you very closely. And one of the things you wrote was, protecting ineffective educators is a human rights issue. It's just that the humans being wronged are the kids and families, not the ineffective. It was one of a series of tweets I've obviously seen from you that talk about ineffective educators and the role in American education right now. So I asked you a question over Twitter, which I think I've asked you before in person, which is, what do you think the percentage is of ineffective educators in America? Because it seems as though that's an awful lot of what you talk about on Twitter. So I'd just like to know a little bit more about that. First of all, what is an ineffective educator? And secondly, how many of them are there out there?
Well, the first question is an answerable one. The second one may take a moment. As I told you on Twitter, I know you ask better questions than that. So we'll stick with the first. The first is, what makes an ineffective educator? Well, the word teach means that a child should learn, a student should learn. So simply saying something in front of a group of children doesn't necessarily a teacher make. Being able to take a large concept and make it into smaller components so that children can ingest it and make it part of their own self is what teachers do. The best teachers find a way to take whatever concept they're teaching and bring it to a level at which the students understand it and own it, so much so that they can take what they know and they can apply it beyond where they are. And when they're assessed at later points, whether it be through a state standardized assessment or through some form of teacher-generated assessment, that they can, in fact, prove that that which the teacher told them, they've learned. That's an effective teacher.
Mm-hmm. And how much of that do you think you can learn through standardized assessments, through numbers, really?
Well, it depends on what the specific skill that you're looking at, but standardized assessments in and of themselves shouldn't be the only method of determining whether or not children learn, because sometimes we look at just the objective score, meaning if the child's in the fourth grade, do they read at a fourth grade level? Many teachers are hamstringed with students who come from other ineffective educators who have not been able to train the children in the way that they should be, so that they, in many cases, they're years behind. And so a fourth grade teacher who's getting children who are two and three grade levels behind may move that child a grade or two in 1 year, but that grade level may not show itself on a state standardized assessment. So when we look at state assessments, we need to look at them more globally. We need to look at them, one, from the objective perspective, and two, we need to look at them from the growth perspective.
Okay, so the second part of my question, you don't think is a good question. When I ask you how many ineffective educators there are out there, the reason I ask and why I think it's a pretty good question is that if let's say 50% of America's teachers were poor, that would seem like an epidemic, right? And if 20% were ineffective, that would seem like something we should really, really address. And if it was 10%, it would be something we should absolutely do something about. But if it's like 1% of all the teachers out there, or 0.1% of all the teachers out there, it might not be the type of crisis that you and many others seem to suggest it is. So that's why I'm looking for a number.
Okay.
Like,
so,
like,
then let me give you a response to some of what I think you want. If 75% of the children in the United States of America take the ACT, which is the largest taken, the most often taken college preparatory examination, if 75% of the children who took it were not college ready, if only 5% of the African Americans and 13% of Latinos, would you say that the system in and of itself is effectively preparing children for college?
Hmm. So what you're saying is that the numbers are suggesting to you that the system is not preparing children for college.
It's suggested not just to me, but to Dr. Martin Luther King back in 1967 when he said that the American public schools are not teaching and they don't know how to teach.
So,
what Dr. King said.
So the system, as we all know, is more than just classroom teachers. The system is the buildings, the administrators, the folks on the school board. It is the people in the cafeteria. It's the parents. It's the
everybody.
Students themselves.
So
it's everyone.
Everything.
So when you talk about ineffective educators, you're not just talking about teachers. You're talking about everyone in the education system.
I have never just spoken of teachers. In fact, if you say you follow my tweets, anytime I'm asked what do I think is the single most impactful part of the academic experience is the in-school administrators, the principals, the vice principals, the department chairs, the individuals who determine who stays in the building and who goes.
So how do you quantify how well they do? I mean, because for teachers, I mean, you gave me a really good layout of how you might consider what a good teacher is, but how do you figure out if an administrator, someone who's running a school, is really doing a good job over the course of time?
There are lots of ways. One of the ways in which you can tell is just by walking into the school. You can get a sense of order, and you can feel a sense of love within the building as soon as you walk into good schools. People know a good school when they walk into it. And then in other schools that are ineffective, you go in and it's chaos. I went to visit a school yesterday here in Hartford that we may be working with in the not-so-distant future, and the parents there told me they felt like it was chaos going on in there. The children said they felt like there was chaos. The colleagues in there said they felt like there was chaos, felt like it was unsafe. When children feel unsafe, they can't learn. When they don't feel loved, they can't learn. When they don't feel like there's a relationship, they cannot learn. So it starts with an overall culture and climate. And then it goes to what the nuts and bolts of it are. It's not about whether or not teachers are nice. It's whether or not teachers and administrators put forward rigor. I mean, the same expectations that they would have for their own biological children that they have for all children. So if your child is in the fourth grade at home, you expect them to be able to read at the fourth grade level at home. The same is true at school. If you're educating fourth graders, you don't sit and talk about how come their parents are poor, how come their parents don't come to school. In fact, one of the parents last night at that school said that the reason why that school is ineffective is because there are no parents there. And I said, I beg to differ, because we don't know why parents are not there. There are times when my sons came to my school that I missed student activities because I was at my job. We don't know why parents don't come, and we wouldn't consider a parent who doesn't go visit her child at Phillips Exeter to be disengaged.
We're talking with Dr. Steve Perry, principal of Capital Preparatory Magnet School, and we're going to take your phone calls at 860-275-7266. Steve is in Rocky Hill. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? I have a question for Dr. Perry here. I was a teacher. I actually was a teacher in Middletown for 17 years. And actually met Dr. Perry through Upward Bound. I was a worker, teacher for Upward Bound for several years in the summertime. And during those 17 years, this was one of the hardest jobs I've ever had. I was an ambulance driver before that, a landscaper, paid for my ways in college. But teaching takes a lot of effort from a lot of people. And we definitely have to put it forth as much effort as we possibly can because these kids deserve it. But I'm wondering how, Dr. Perry, how can you say that teaching is not hard because you're working with kids? We have lack of resources. We have kindergarten teachers that are in the classroom with children with special needs that can't even have them diagnosed because there's not enough resources. So the teachers have to try to work on all of that, 4, 5, 6 different kids at once, deal with the other 17, 18, 19 kids in the class to give them the education that they need. And on top of that, they have to fill out all the mounds of paperwork that over the past few years is just getting higher and higher and higher. How can you justify saying that teaching is not a hard subject or it's not a hard career path because they're just kids?
Well, if we met in Upward Bound, then that means that you and I met when I was a student, and that means that you and I met in a time when I was living in public housing where – many of my friends and I were trying to find a way out of poverty by going to school during the summer and going to classes after school and working on Saturdays. And with those people with whom we worked, we found a sense of connection and commitment, love. And those individuals who took it upon themselves to teach during the summer taught because they loved kids. And anything that you love is hard. But hard is not impossible. And very often when the word hard is used with regards to education, it's treated as if what we're doing is something that has never been done before. Yet every single day in every single city in this great nation and all over the world, there are educators who are taking on the tasks with less resources than we have here in Connecticut and making great things happen. So when I say it's not hard. What I'm saying is it's not impossible. I'm saying what a joy it is, what an honor it is that someone would drop their child off here in the morning and give us the opportunity to be a part of their life, to transform their circumstances, to put them in a position to dream dreams that no one could have ever dreamed before just because they bring them to our school. That, to me, is a great joy. I am excited to come to work every single day.
I want to go to Nate, who's calling from Simsbury. Hi, Nate. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Dr. Perry, you just said something about going to work every single day, and I think that's kind of ironic because a minute ago you said that it's the school administrators who ultimately bear the responsibility for the kids' education by way of making sure that their teachers are teaching effectively, yet you yourself as a school administrator have missed about 20% of the school days this year. Just yesterday, you were giving a speech in New Jersey where you bashed teacher unions. You spend a lot of your school time on Twitter, and of course you're here today talking to John instead of being at your school. So how do you think that you know how well your school is functioning with you not there? And if it functions okay with you not there, why do you have a job at all that pays six figures paid by me, the taxpayer?
Capital Prep is a year-round college preparatory school. We go to school 201 days a year. Unlike my colleagues who run schools that only have 8 months a year, our school calendar begins in July and ends in June. We have the opportunity every single day to be a part of what's happening. And my commitment to my students has shown itself through our performance. I'm a member of a great team, and because of the way that the unions have set the contracts up, I have 112 vacation days that I can't take 3 weeks off during the summer to go to Europe like many of my colleagues. In fact, quite the opposite, and I have 175 sick days that I've not used. What you need to be asking about is how is it possible that Capital Prep every year makes it possible for children from throughout the region to come to one place and exist in one space, to exist as a family, and perform, outperform the nearby schools and outperform even suburban schools. African-American children at Capital Prep outperform many of the suburban children in places like Greenwich. So your question, if you dare ask a question about how we perform as opposed to your personal issues with me, what you try to find out is, how come more schools are not doing what we do? Well, I have days off, and I take those days off. And because I take those days off to get out and speak on behalf of children as opposed to making up excuses as to why children cannot be educated, I understand that there are some people whose comfort level is made to feel low. But that's your problem. I'm here for children. I am not here to make grown people who have pensions on the line feel comfortable. I am here because I know that every single child in the United States of America needs an equal education, not just the education that you feel these children deserve.
Well, I think one of the things that I think I hear from a lot of teachers, though, and this came in a note over the our website, WNPR.org, you can join our conversation there. Kiera writes, and she asks a question of you, and she says, why the hyperbole? Why the invective directed at public school teachers? Wouldn't people still listen to you if you did not paint the world of education as us versus them, Steve versus the union, Capital Prep versus everyone else? I think what she's getting at is it seems in your statements that there is something directed at teachers and teachers' unions. That, I mean, maybe, Dr. Perry, you could have this conversation in a different sort of way, in a way that's, you know, not quite as angry sometimes towards teachers and teachers' unions.
John, what I'm perplexed by is why you're not angry. I'm perplexed by the fact that you see that in the United States of America, and in Hartford in particular, that there are schools in which 95% of the children are not reading at level. 95% of them are not doing math at level. That doesn't make you angry? You're okay with that? I am sad by the fact that you, as a person who I've for a long time actually have respect for, can look at the disparaging relationship that our children have the disparate relationship that our children have with the public schools and not see something wrong, that you can see an achievement gap and that doesn't move your soul.
But I understand, because you're asking me a question, you gotta let me answer the question. Okay, no, please do.
Okay. So if your concern is the tone of my statements, then by God, call me angry. If that's the worst thing that you're going to say about me, because I care about children, and I know that having been a child who was born into poverty, whose mother had him on her 16th birthday, that when only the only way out of poverty is education, and there are not enough kids getting out, then I'm going to be mad.
I think here's the point. So I asked you a question, and you immediately turned it back on me as though somehow or other, I'm not angry about education. Sir, I've been covering education here for 20 years in Connecticut, and we have done an enormous amount of work on this issue. And I think that's what I'm talking about. It's not about turning it back on me. I am angry, and this is why I have conversations like this, because I want to learn.
What is it about the education system that makes you angry?
Well, one of the things that makes me angry. Let me put it this way. I think when people make claims about education, they need to be able to back up those claims about education. And you certainly have been able to back up a lot of your claims about education. But, I mean, you were just talking about how your school does compared to other schools in the city. Your test scores on the CAPT and the CMT last year to this year are down pretty substantially. You've flatlined over the course of a number of years the achievement at your school, while other schools in Hartford have been succeeding more than you have. At the end of the day, a lot of those other people are doing a lot of great work too, but they're not talking about teachers and teachers unions as much or as loudly as you are.
Okay,
they're just doing their job.
Please. So, John, here's a question: what are you angry about? Because I'm angry about the fact that we have a school that has no achievement gap. And the only thing that you're focusing on is that if you look at our scores over time, that we've had a tough year this past year. But in fact, we still find ourselves at the top of the performers in Hartford, just so we're clear. So when you present the information, I suspect that you'll present it in the relative perspective, which is to say that Capital Prep remains one of the top performing high schools in Hartford. That's A. I'm sure you would have presented that had I given you the opportunity to. But I asked you.
Oh, it does. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No, but I know you were going to get to that because the way you presented the information at first almost presumed that you were going to present us as if we were going down and we were not doing well. But in fact, we're still among the top performing schools, even going down.
Absolutely. And I did say that. So please continue.
You didn't get a chance to say that. I recognize that. And you were going to. But the question I'm asking you still, because you want me to change my tone, I'm asking you, what is it about seeing an achievement gap in the state of Connecticut? What is it about seeing some children being given access to a quality education and other children not? What is it about that? Tell me something, please, that makes you angry, because I know what makes me angry, but I'm just trying to figure out something that makes you angry about education.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things that make me angry about education, but I mean, you know, the really good part about this is I'm a talk show host and I'm asking the questions, and so let's continue on to find out a little bit more about what you do. You know, yesterday, one of the statements that you made, and I know you've said something like this before, is that traditional schools are over-feminized. What does that mean?
That means that if we look at the performance of African-American, Latino boys, what we see is they're most expelled, they're most suspended, their grades are typically the lowest, their GPAs and the achievement between them and white girls is typically the greatest. The group that is the least likely to be suspended are white females. We look at who the teachers are in large part, and they're overwhelmingly white females. That doesn't make them inherently bad, but what we see very often is that many of the behaviors of the boys that are being criminalized, which is accepted throughout the conversation, and this is why it's funny to me that somehow someone would be offended by this, because this is all data that we can all check, and you know this to be true. And so the fact that I say that there's an over-feminization of primary education, what I'm saying is that we have boys who are being suspended or before that punished for acting like boys, for being rambunctious, for responding the way that boys typically do versus girls. We know this. We know that there's a typical difference between the way in which boys and girls act. And in fact, there are many people who will tell you that there are differences even between the way in which boys and girls learn. People who have children who have a son and a daughter, they will tell you there's a profound difference between their middle school boy and their middle school girl. Their middle school boy is unorganized, and their middle school girl is typically organized.
But I think it gets, and the reason for my question, it gets back to the earlier question I asked, which is about tone and about rhetoric, really. Can you understand where very hardworking, very committed female teachers who've done an awful lot to educate children across Connecticut and across America could read that comment or hear that comment and say that it is an attack against them? Could your word
John,
choice about that not be different?
John?
I'm asking you a question. Okay.
What's good is you get to talk like you talk because you are in a different space than I am, and I get to talk like I talk. And I don't tell you how to respond to what you see. Whether someone works hard is irrelevant. Whether they get the results is what's relevant. Someone please explain to me, therefore, what is the reason why African-American males and Latino males and even white males are the ones who are the most suspended, expelled, identified as special needs? Someone please tell me what that is. Because what's something so my job is to make you feel comfortable with the fact that children are being harmed by a system that is inherently racist? I'm supposed to make someone feel comfortable with? I don't feel comfortable with that. As somebody who educates largely African-American Latino children, I'm not going to try and make somebody feel comfortable. I'm trying to change it. Let's be clear. I want to change it. And that some people are made to feel uncomfortable about that, that's their problem.
Dr. Steve Perry, principal of Capital Preparatory Magnet School. When we come back from our break, we'll take some of your phone calls at 860-275-7266. We will also talk with Paul Diego Holzer, who is here from Achievement First, take a little closer look at schools in Hartford and in Connecticut, and we'll take some of your calls again, 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking about education today on the show. Joining us by phone is Dr. Steve Perry, who is the principal of Capital Prep Magnet School. We're going to take some more of your phone calls in just a moment. I want to welcome in Paul Diego Holzer, who is executive director of Achieve Hartford. I misspoke earlier. I'd said that he's part of Achievement First. That's a very different organization. So my apologies, Paul, but welcome to our studio. Thank you so much for coming in.
No, thanks for having me, John.
I was talking with Dr. Perry, and we're going to get back to him in just a moment about numbers a little bit. And I know that that's something that you track, achievement in Hartford. And I guess, first of all, I'll just ask, are we talking about apples versus apples or oranges versus apples when we talk about, you know, year over year test results at one school? It's a different group of kids every single year, and in some cases, a different group of teachers.
Yeah, you know, as long as you're talking about, data at proficient versus proficient or goal to goal or magnet to magnet or magnet to neighborhood, I mean, you know, you can make whatever comparison with data that you want. I think the point of using data is to try to drive home this notion of whether something's working or not, and you have to identify the conditions that exist in that school so that you're not just looking at one piece of data. I think we get trapped, right, by the focus on test scores, which, you know, my organization, we love to focus on test scores because, as Dr. Perry has said, you know, it's about results, right? But I think people forget, you know, that you can have a school like Dr. Perry has, you know, where you add lower grades, you know, kids that he hasn't had in his school before. You know, you might bring scores down one year, right? But no, you know, most folks don't get that far to look at the data. You know, they just kind of look at data and say, hey, you know, something went down. Hey, let's talk about that. Or, oh, hey, you know, something went up. You know, let's talk about that and claim success there. You know, Betances had an unbelievable year in 2012, 38
points. Betances is a Hartford school, just for our listeners
Absolutely.
Around the state. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you. And, now they're trying to figure out whether there's been some cheating in 2013. You know, so, I mean, this you know, you've got to look at the test scores, create your apples-to-apples comparisons, but you also have to ask deeper questions, which is, you know, why are kids performing or not performing at a given school? And I've been enjoying this conversation so far.
Well, okay, so another question for you then. When it comes to why kids may or may not be achieving at a certain school, I understand that Capital Prep has added grades over time. And so looking at the CMT scores, the scores for kids in grades 3 through 8, maybe aren't exactly the apples and apples we're looking at. But looking at CAP scores, these are 10th graders. These are high schoolers. Capital Prep in this last year from 2012 to 2013 had a little bit of a drop, as Dr. Perry acknowledged, from 82.1% overall proficiency to 75.7% overall proficiency. But that is a little blip. consistently across the board, Capital Prep has performed very, very well. Not as well, actually, in this last year as all the other magnet schools in Hartford, but very, very well. A school like High School Inc. is seen as a neighborhood school in Hartford.
That's right.
What's the difference between a magnet school and a neighborhood school?
Well, you know, what High School Inc. is experiencing, right, is 100% of their population coming from Hartford, right? What Capital Prep and the other magnet schools experience are, you know, hopefully roughly 50% of their kids coming from Hartford. Everyone wishes that would be more. And then the other half coming from surrounding suburbs. You know, that's the core difference. And so you have different kinds of schools that are set up with different challenges that need to be met in different ways and many times in the same way. I mean, you talk about what's happening at High School Inc. You know, that is the most successful neighborhood high school in Hartford. But then there's a lot of folks that would say, well, hey, you know what? That's not fair because, you know, Bulkley didn't get a chance to start new. Right. You know, Harvard Public High School, all the academies didn't get a chance to start new. High School Inc. started fresh and new. I mean, so, you know, you've got to really disaggregate, you know, what's happening and put on a larger context with an equally rigorous set of expectations. Right. I mean, I think, you know, Dr. Perry, I'm sure, is thinking of 2012 to 2013 with some sort of some urgency, saying like, you know, that's not how we roll. You know, we're going to get back up into the 80s. We'll do what we need. You know, High School Inc. has the same level of urgency, saying, you know, we can break into the 60s. You know, at some point soon, and we got to get to the 70s. You know, we got to get to the 80s and play with the magnet schools.
Dr. Perry, does that sound about right?
Absolutely, and we make decisions as a result of that. We decide who's going to come back as a colleague and who's not. We don't look at just the numbers. We look at the overall performance of the classroom. If the teacher cannot control his or her classroom, then that's an issue for us. We do what we can to provide significant support. We have professional learning communities. We have what we call individualized teacher learning plans. We have a teacher symposium at the end of the year. We have multiple opportunities for teachers to work together and with the administration to get them up. But at the end of the day, I have to stare the parents in the face and say, I'm going to give your child the very best education that I know, the same education that I give to my own sons who both attend Capital Prep.
Yeah, and I think one thing to really mention here that we focus on as the Education Reform Advocacy Group in the city of Hartford is that, you know, we got to look at the kind of cultures that exist in buildings, right? So the kind of environment that Dr. Perry is creating with his colleagues, right? You know, he's trying to create a very special environment there where folks, you know, want to work at that school in that culture, right? You know, Terrell Hill at High School Inc. are doing this. You know, he's got the same focus and intensity about trying to find the right mix of educators for his building. There's not enough of a focus on that, right? I mean, this is, you know, people have to feel like they are picking a school and a culture that is right for them. Principals need to feel like they are picking educators that are right for their culture at that school. You know, more folks have to start doing that because ultimately, you know, you don't want to be in a school where, you know, not one teacher, you know, is saying anything around a table during a meeting with a principal, you know, where things aren't working and no one is saying a thing.
Well, let's go to some phone calls. A lot of people want to join us. Georgia's in Middletown. Hi, Georgia. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to ask Dr. Perry, how come he says that he has 100% graduation rate to four-year colleges from his school when in actuality, like, for instance, the class of 2013 started with 60 students, and out of that 60 students, only 28 of them actually graduated. 60 out of 28% doesn't equal 100%.
I have never said that we have 100% graduation rate, ever. I say that 100% of our graduates have gone on to four-year colleges. No school has 100% graduation rate. In fact, again, when we look at the data, we see that Capital Prep remains one of the top graduating high schools in Hartford and has since we opened in 2006. And those students who typically leave Capital Prep are typically suburban, and do so in large part because of the long commute. And for the first couple of years, it was in large part because they had other hardships, like we didn't have a building. And so they had to walk almost 2 miles to Bushnell Park for gym in the winter. And the same was true for sports. We didn't have any sports facilities for the first 5 years. And then there were those children for whom this school just wasn't for them. And they made that decision as well. This is a school of choice.
When you say a school just isn't for them, are they always making that determination? Is that something that you or the other educators are making? I mean, how does that process work? Because from what I understand, I mean, there's a pretty high attrition rate. You know, kids who start in the ninth grade, say, in your high school, don't always necessarily go all the way through to 12th grade.
I don't know what high is for you. Again, the word high for you and the word high for me are very different. But the students who decide to go to another school are students who decide to go to another school. And each one of them does it for their own reasons, but they do not. But there is no one pushing them out. It would be all too easy to focus on, and this is really sad, as we're talking to the brother from Chief Harford. It's really sad that we're having a conversation simply about one school when the issues are so vast and so compelling, and that the issues here are about trying to undo the success of one school, as opposed to looking around and wondering why there are not more schools. If every school in Harford were only performing at Capital Prep's level, this would be a suburban district. Let's call a spade a spade. Let's focus on what's real. Stop allowing somebody to come in and take great journalists and have them talking about things that really don't matter.
What really matters
is making sure that our children have access to a quality education.
Dr. Perry, no, I agree with you. I agree with you. I just have to say. No, here's the only thing. Near as I can tell, you are the only principal in all of Connecticut that has a webpage that says the most trusted educator in America. I think it's worthwhile, and you have a big platform. I think it's worthwhile talking about your school. I mean, Paul, you were just nodding. Do you think it's worthwhile talking about Steve Perry's school?
I do, if we can get into some more details about what it is that makes things work. You know, I mean,
give
me an example.
When I rolled in, I actually came in with a note that just said, you know, why are we going to spend so much time talking about Capital Prep? And I think it's because people like to talk about controversy. People want to talk about personalities. You know, I don't have to like Steve Perry, you know, to respect the educators in his school and what they're doing for kids. You know, that's just, you know, I feel like we get trapped in this, you know, we are either demonizing each other or we are too nice and not saying anything. Right. And so here we go. So if I can, you know, try to change the conversation,
I would love that.
I can tell.
That would be awesome for me.
You know, I think it'd be great, you know, Dr. Perry, to hear from you talk about some of the stuff that you've talked at in other settings, specifically about, you know, the conversations you have with educators, right, who you are trying to attract to come work at your school, or once they're there, to really try to create a culture at Capital Prep. That is different, you know, that can do for kids, you know, what folks are trying to do. And also then if you can mention specifically the kind of conversations that, you know, the youth developer in you and how that comes out in the relationships that are built with kids. Because I think that's such an important part of this conversation and education is missed, is about just how relationships get formed. And I know that's something that you spend a lot of time on. So it'd be great to elucidate that a bit.
So what we do is we do one of the things that you talked about. We work really hard to make sure that we are hiring the right person for Capital Prep. And what that typically means to us is somebody who, in addition to teaching, does something else with kids, whether they were in college or they've been working, whether they coach, if they're in a church group, they do something with a church group, or if they're in any group, the Girl Scouts, but that they do something with kids, because we want to be around people who really love being around people, because kids are easy to love, but sometimes hard to like, because kids are kids and they say things and they do things that can sometimes be very difficult. So when we begin the interview process, we do so with that in mind. And when I say we, I'm typically the last person, if at all, to determine who works here at Capital Prep. Our colleagues make that decision. The colleague committee comes together. Sometimes there are children up there, but more often than not, it's colleagues. They go through the resumes because they have to work beside these individuals. And I trust them 100% of the time. When they send a recommendation to me, I always sign off on it. Because if they believe that this person is who they need, and there are times when they've sent people to me and I've thought, are you serious? And they say, yes, this is who we want, because they believe that they are Capital Prep. And we speak of Capital Prep as a lifestyle. We talk about it as if it's going to be the hardest job you're going to have, which means you're going to have to coach. I mean, you're not going to have to coach. You're going to have to advise, and you're going to have to teach. Which is different. We had to actually get an addendum to the Harford Federation Teachers contract in order to be able to do that. You're going to work year round, and this is all because all we did was look at what had happened in private schools. In private schools, you saw that they coach, teach, and advise. They called it a triple threat. And if you look at Upward Bound programs, what you find is you have advisors, and all of it's around developing opportunities to create more relationships with children. We understand at college level they call it a fit. At the primary and secondary level, we call it relationships. The more effectively you can build relationships with children, the greater your daily attendance and your greater your overall performance. Capital Prep's daily attendance, even though we're a 201-day school year, is 96.9 again, among the highest. So our graduation rates are among the highest, our performance is among the highest, our daily attendance is among the highest. And one of the reasons is, because our teachers are all advisors, and they have the responsibility of meeting with children every single day and checking in on them and calling home every other week and making sure that they do the things. One of the most important things about Capital Prep is that there's nothing terribly revolutionary about it. All we did was copy successful models.
If you want to join us, 860-275-7266 as we talk with Dr. Steve Perry, and we're also talking with Paul Diego Holzer, who's Executive Director of Achieve Hartford. If you want to join us with an email, where we live at WNPR.org, or you can tweet us at where we live. Let's get to a few more phone calls before we take a break. Sarah's on the line. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hi. Dr. Perry asked before what you were angry about, and what I am angry about is that Dr. Perry goes around making claims that aren't true and then is not challenged. One of the claims he made on this program earlier was that his students are outperforming students in Greenwich. And as I tweeted to your program earlier, that simply isn't true. I tweeted both the SAT scores and the CAP and CMT scores, and the students at Capital Prep are not outperforming the students in Greenwich. And he is the fact that he is going around making these kind of statements that are not true, and still having the chutzpah to claim that he is America's most trusted educator is something that, and then being defended by, you know, reformers like Achieve Hartford, is something that, as a writer, as someone who works with young people, as someone who has been on the special ed side of things myself, makes me really furious.
Okay. What's really good is when people take some of what you say and not what you specifically said. I said our African American students. That's what I said. I did not say our students. I said African American. And I said when you look at growth of our students, you will see that our students at Capital Prep, in most cases, actually start behind the average in Hartford and then move forward. So the growth of our students is significant. And I mentioned earlier when John asked me about how you measure an effective teacher, I said you don't just measure them based upon the objective performance of the students, but you also look at the growth. And so challenging me, you should do, but challenge me based upon what I said.
Sarah, thank you very much for your phone call. Let's go to Trudy, who's calling from Hartford. Hi, Trudy. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Hello, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Hi. I'm calling because I actually have a son who attends Capital Prep.
Yeah.
I just want to say that he's been there for 2 years now, and it has significantly changed his approach towards school, the opportunity to be there. I get phone calls from advisors every 2 weeks to let me know how he's doing. I'm so impressed with the diversity of the staff. I think that's one thing that you guys haven't mentioned that is tremendous when you're talking about working with urban students. Diversity in terms of just culture and also the male-to-female ratio in staff. It's something that I haven't seen in any other school. And I've worked in a lot of schools in Hartford and other urban areas. Also, there's a visible administration. Dr. Perry is at almost every home football game on the field with the kids. It's amazing. I've also never seen that before. There's also, very strict rules in place that the kids know about, but they adjust and they do it. My son gets up every morning on his own, irons his clothes, and walks out the door without any prodding or convincing, which is something that 5 years ago would never have happened. So I just want to say that, what Dr. Perry's doing is amazing. I'm a big supporter, and I want to thank him for everything that he's doing.
Trudy, thank you.
I really appreciate that.
Thank you very much for your phone call, Trudy. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll get to some more broader issues as we talk about education, as we're joined by Dr. Steve Perry and also Paul Diego Holzer from Achieve Hartford. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking about education today on the program. Joining us by phone is Dr. Steve Perry, who's the principal of Capital Prep Magnet School here in Hartford. Paul Diego Holzer, who's executive director of Achieve Hartford, is here as well. We're taking a lot of your phone calls. An email just came in from John. I'll put to you, Paul. If the Capital Prep model exceeds the achievement of Greenwich, and again, Dr. Perry said specifically what he was talking about there, then why hasn't the city of Hartford applied this model to all Hartford schools?
You know, folks have been asking that in Hartford for a long time, and I think that they're going to get a suggestion or proposal in that vein very soon. You know, if you're interested in this, come to the November 19th Board of Ed meeting.
And this is a proposal where there's another school, the Sand School, I believe, that would be actually turned into another Capital Prep school?
Rumor has it. That it is Sand.
When you say rumor has it, can we we've been talking about this a little bit. I think Dr. Perry mentioned it slightly. Do we know that this is actually going to happen? Is he going to be given another school?
Well, listen, I mean, I think we want to be careful about how we phrase questions like, is he going to be given another school, right?
Important how we phrase things.
Right?
Yes, you're right.
Because, you know, that's part of this whole problem is that, you know, it's I think, you know, that's how folks are going to phrase this, right? Folks are going to say, you know, why are we giving Steve Perry another school? He's this, he's that. You know, but the real question is, you know, what does the Hartford Public School District, right, our district in Hartford and the Board of Education want to do to try to expand good models in the city of Hartford, right? And so they will hopefully take up a proposal on November 19th, next Tuesday, to look at how Capital Prep's model, right, and everything that makes Capital Prep Capital Prep, and I'm sure Steve Perry will be asked to expound on all that, right, in the days to come. At another school. You know, I have heard about America's Choice at Sand being targeted, but I have not seen anything publicly come out of the Board of Education or the Hartford Public Schools. But I would expect that that is the school that will be targeted to take on a Capital Prep type model. I think people's questions will be, you know, well, what's going to happen to the folks at that school and how will things change for parents? And all those are great, great questions that folks need to come ready to answer. And I'm just going to kind of take this moment on the mic to just say, you know, come ready to answer those questions, Hartford Public Schools, Board of Education, because when you don't have answers to a lot of questions that make people worried, you know, then you take something good like this, like a good idea, like to expand a model that is succeeding, and you make it really, really hard to get the community to support it. And this community has been taken along on a 7-year ride of reform. I think a lot of folks have had good faith in a lot of the efforts that this district's been putting forth. A lot of things have not worked. We talk about what has not worked all the time. More people need to talk about what has not worked. But when you want to make something that has worked reach more kids, you know, you have to figure out how do I do that and build support for it and make sure that it makes sense to those in the community who need to understand what we are trying to do.
Dr. Perry, very quickly, just because we have a lot of phone callers who want to join the conversation, what can you tell us about this plan?
I can tell you that we have been asked to consider to replicate in a number of schools by parents in those schools. And one of the reasons why I'm not in the studio is because I had to meet with some parents here from Sand yesterday, who were among those with whom we had an opportunity to speak yesterday, one of whom said his prayers were answered by knowing that his child could have access to a Capital Preparatory academic experience, which is by no means driven by me, but in fact in a team of educators who work tirelessly to get what we get done.
Let's go to Stephanie in Washington, Connecticut. Hello, Stephanie.
Hello. I have been listening to your program, and I had heard that you addressed the achievement gap. I just finished a book called The Smartest Kids in the World by Amanda Ripley, and she asserts that we're falling behind the rest of the world with our education system. Basically, she argues that it's too easy to become a teacher in the United States. If you want to be a high school math teacher, you don't even need to major in math, so it's kind of no wonder kids aren't doing well. And other high-performing countries have higher expectations of their students, and it's more difficult to become a teacher. So it seems like that might be a change that needs to be addressed. And then I also had a question about actual changes that are happening in our education system. I've heard a lot about Common Core that's been implemented by the states, and I was wondering what the speakers thought about how that might move the education system forward.
Dr. Perry, quickly, if you would, but I think it's a good question about Common Core.
Common Core is going to be a beast for a lot of schools. It's going to be very difficult because it's going to expose a lot of the limitations in our performance. It is going to be more rigorous. It really is. And I understand why some people are afraid of it. I say this. Some parents should take a look at it and take some of these practice modules, and I think you'll get a sense of just what we're asking kids. But on the same token, every country and every city that I've seen that's done well has in fact increased the expectations on children. Nobody rises to low expectation.
Paul, quick comment on that?
Yeah, just I think you know, I'm just going to point this out for the listeners who are in Hartford and Greater Hartford. You know, this Common Core transition is also going to allow districts to not take much accountability for performance for the next few years. I mean, these transitions, you know, towards higher standards, you know, who's not going to be in support of that? But we have got to find a way also to have a normal conversation, you know, in any individual school community about how are our schools doing. And when you make a change like this, you know, what you do is you give folks, you know, years to now not take some assessments this year and get a waiver and pilot the Common Core assessments. Then you've got a baseline year and you're waiting for a second year to really talk about growth. And so, you know, folks are going to have to, you know, not just depend on Common Core and state tests to understand how their schools and their kids are doing.
I want to go to...
I'm going to say one really quick thing about that.
Go ahead.
I also think it's important. One of the ways in which we currently administer state examinations is problematic, meaning putting them all in one month. What I think we need to do is to break them down into smaller pieces, because right now they're of no use even to the schools. That when we get the data back specifically for us, we're already in school. So the data, if you have a kid who's in the fourth grade and he didn't perform well, then, you know, you're stuck because the kid's already in the fifth grade. So we need to be able to change the way in which we administer these assessments, make them smaller, have them more regularly so that we can do something with the information. And the test givers can create tests that are more meaningful.
Hmm. Chris is in Kensington. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, all these magnet schools cropping up everywhere, has there ever been a study to see what resources they're sucking from the public schools, and any numbers on schools without magnet schools in the area, how well they're doing compared to the public schools where the resources are being pulled away from all these, you know, magnet schools?
Good question. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, we just need to be careful on how we describe things. You know, magnet schools are public schools. Right, and they are getting a lot more resources than your traditional neighborhood school, but that money is coming from the state based on, you know, legal decisions and court rulings and stipulations that, thankfully, I would say in the Hartford area, you know, are pulling more money from the state to target a number of kids and put them in racially integrated settings. So, you know, it's not as if the Hartford Public Schools or any district with a high amount of magnet schools is making a decision to just throw money, you know, at magnet schools and not other schools. You know, they're doing what they can with the money they have.
But the question, the long-standing question has been, if there is these magnet schools and the magnet schools do well, there are still going to be neighborhood schools, schools that are not magnets. What happens to those kids? And we sort of got to this earlier, Paul, but it's a question of, if this model works, why don't all schools work like that? Because some of them do and some of them don't, it seems as though some schools have an advantage over other schools. And I'm sorry, we just have a minute left, but go ahead.
Yeah, so real quick, because this is what my organization focuses on, right?
Yeah.
You know, there is nary a school district, an entire district in the country that has figured out how to systematically turn around their low-performing schools, right? Folks just have not figured out how to do this. So if you can get magnet money and extra resources and all that comes with magnet schools being magnet schools, that's great for those schools and for those kids that are lucky enough to win that lottery. But the focus, you know, of a school district needs to be not so much on how are our magnet schools doing and did they, you know, go below 80 points, but how are our neighborhood schools doing that we are charged to turn around and to figure out. And that is a nut that Hartford is trying to crack. It has not yet cracked it. It's going to take some years to really do that, and that's what we need to be focused on.
But it's also why I was asking about the apples to apples earlier. When you have a magnet school where you have kids coming in from the suburbs, you have some new money, you have some new rules, you have, for instance, a lower percentage of kids who are English language learners, a lower percentage
of
kids who have special education needs. It's not really fair to compare how that magnet school is doing to how that neighborhood school is doing.
Right. No, and I agree. I mean, you know, it's not about making comparisons and saying, you know what, you know, well, the magnet schools are much better. Why don't we just have all magnet schools? Well, I mean, if we could do that and afford that, I think people would have already done that.
Well, something to consider is this, that one of the things that I stand against is making children go to the school that's closest to their house. And
Dr. Perry, and I apologize, and I'm going to have to leave it there just because we're running low on time. Dr. Steve Perry from Capital Prep, Paul Diego Holzer from Achieve Hartford, thank you both very much. You can all of the conversation going at WNPR.org. I'm John Dankosky. Have a great weekend.